And we are live with a new edition of the Mahoning Movement Show. Very special guest today, Matt Onesti in the house.
Yeah! Woo! Yeah! What's going on, everybody?
Yay!
Thanks for having me, Jacob. This is awesome.
Always an honor and pleasure. And we're excited to be talking about planning out your event March 3rd, the release of your
March
special.
March 4th.
March 4th. I'm
Friday,
sorry.
Yep. March 4th.
I have it right in the calendar, but
we planned that on purpose because we wanted to make sure everybody remember that it was March 4th.
Yeah. So you
it was
first
a transition. This is a joke. Uh-huh. It's like we're faking improv now.
There we go. Know. Yeah.
But yeah, Friday, March 4th, third floor of the Funny Farm. It's finally happening. The release of Matt Onesti makes you the release of Matt Onesti's Uncomfortable. I changed the name from when we filmed it.
So just shorten it. Just
shorten it for brevity. I learned from the Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. From the book. Yeah.
When in doubt, change your name for legal reasons because you're under investigation.
It always helps. Yeah.
So I've changed it from, you know, Matt Onesti makes you uncomfortable to Matt Onesti's meta.
Yeah. No copyright infringements.
At all. Just trying to dodge all legal ramifications.
There you go. That's what life's all about, right?
Selling information to the government in order to, you know, swing an election. Just your normal type of things that guys do with information.
You know. So you first recorded the special on the second floor of the Knox building at the Lemon Grove 3 years ago. Now it was 2019, October something of 2019.
It was, right? October 25th. Of 2019.
Different days.
It was in the before times.
Yeah.
Before times. Where we could all spit in each other's mouth freely.
And, you know?
And nothing would stop us from that.
There was a lot of it that night, Ian.
I miss it. There was a ton of it. I remember you specifically when you spit down my throat to start off we got in, we were taking tickets, and you said, Matt, good luck.
No, right? It was like what was it, Gallagher? The Gallagher people had tarps on the front row and stuff.
That's disgusting. Yeah. But no, that was the before times when things were fun and we could laugh about everything. It's weird thinking about it. I mean, like, so much has happened, and that was one of the best nights that like me, Jesse, and Harrison have ever had.
It was an awesome night, and you had that second floor looking better than it's ever looked. You had the backdrop and stuff, or it was like the Tonight Show and stuff, you know.
That room, I will die on this hill, that is one of my favorite rooms.
That's awesome.
In this
Thank
whole
you.
Area, Jacob, you have such a gem at your disposal. And doing that room, I felt like I was doing like an actual theater show, which was it made everything so. And we had that big you have that giant light, that giant fixture that we had over the stage, everything that
the chandelier. Yeah. Chandelier, also like, thanks to Maple Turner getting that chandelier.
You have such a beautiful crew.
Thank you.
It makes everything look so nice, and it makes us look like professionals. We're able to put out a special and people are like, oh God, you guys are actually legit, not a bunch of assholes in a bar.
Yeah. Even though we are that too, but yeah, at least we can pretend to be.
We're good at pretending. We're good at hiding from the truth.
Exactly.
But dude, like we filmed that. I mean, it feels like forever ago now. It was such a different time, and it sucks that it took this long. I mean, obviously, a ton of crazy shit has happened since then. But it feels good to finally be saying like we're gonna release this March 4th. Jesse Pimpinella has already released his special. He released his The Hot Mess, which is the other special that we recorded that night.
Mm-hmm.
He released his about a month ago.
And that got some pretty good traction,
he
too, right?
He found his way. So that son of a... How is we allowed to swear?
I think we're allowed to swear. Joe, we're allowed to swear on this show. No, we're less.
Like I said, I feel bad sometimes. I'll find myself saying "bitch," and it's like
it's. I think what's on the internet, so we have to worry about the FCC,
that's
right?
True. That's, the rules don't matter on the internet.
Yeah.
Everything's legal on the internet. but no, Jesse. He released a special. He shot up to. I think he got to number one on new releases, and he held that for like couple days.
On what was
on Amazon?
That's a pretty big deal. Like
he was number two on bestseller for comedy for like he was behind none other than Bo Burnham for the longest time, which
that's
is
pretty
like,
good. Yeah,
and on Amazon, like that dude released it and shot right to the moon instantly, which was amazing.
So can you watch his on Prime, or like, how's that work?
So his, Jesse's audio, which is what we're going to do with mine. His audio is available on like, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon. I feel like I'm missing one. But then you can watch his video on his website.
Are you with Spot? It was Spotify too, or are you siding with Neil Young in this? Or like,
right now we're on Spotify. Yeah. For right now, apparently we're pro COVID. Yeah. For right now, while we're on Spotify, we are just all for it.
Yeah, they're part sponsors of it all. Yeah.
So we're just gonna ignore all the nuance of the argument and 100% on
you. I've never listened. Actually, even though we're on a podcast, I like never listen to podcasts. I'm a huge This American Life fan. Like that was like that changed. Like I love that for radio. So I love This American Life, but I hardly ever watch like podcasts or anything. So I've never seen Joe Rogan. Now I did like news radio back in the day. Rest in peace, Phil Hartman. But I mean, Joe was just kind of like a character on there, right? But now he's like, people listen to him for medical advice.
I only know this as like the Artie Lang seat, but he was like the Artie Lang seat of NewsHour, right? Or was that like an actual show where they were themselves, or were they playing characters?
They were playing characters, which okay, I don't get the Artie Lang seat reference.
From Howard Stern, like the joke, like pretty much like the guy who's like not the main focus, but is like the joke person.
Yeah. Which I do like Howard Stern show, and I think that's been
that's one of the ones I know he's been jumping back into it. I don't think I've listened to him years. It's been a long time.
Exposed me to a lot of things growing up. That and the show Loveline. Remember Loveline on MTV? That might be a little bit before your time. You're a couple years younger than me.
That's before my time. Yeah. Now you're dating yourself.
Oh, shit.
Now you have somehow managed to date yourself. And you're older.
Remember Walter Cronkite? Yeah. Now he know how to give the news.
They're just lying so much nowadays.
Yeah.
That goddamn media.
Yeah. We're in a post-truth era now, so it's like, you can do whatever.
It matters. I could walk and everything now. It's beautiful. Fuck the truth.
Yeah.
We're finally doing it. I'm gonna go in the same route Jesse went with his. I'm gonna be releasing my special in completely independently, putting it up on my own website, gonna sell it.
Like Chance the Rapper,
we're going full on channel. Yeah. We're going full on channel from third. So
yeah. Don't let the labels hold you back, you know?
No, there's no need to. And I think that's like one of the most frustrating things, because we were playing around with different options for what we wanted to do at distribution. And apparently there was a time where you could like easily get stuff on Amazon Prime, but then that went away. Mm. And we were trying to mess around with like different types of distribution, and like we were floating that one around. And everything just seemed too complicated, and there was like too many strings attached to everything. So
I'm sure there's a lot of fine print with all
yeah
that,
so we're
actually own your likeness after
so
that
now
stuff.
we actually own our own property now.
That's what
is,
I do. Yeah.
I mean, that's like the dream, and you know,
yeah,
it's not to say we can't sell it for millions and billions of dollars in a couple of years.
Years to do so. Yeah,
we'll go the Bo Burnham route. Bo Burnham did. You know, we'll sell everything to Netflix in like 15 years.
Is that what he did?
Kind of.
Well, I know like another dated reference, but John Fogerty, there was like a time where he couldn't even sing his own songs or something because he didn't own the rights or whatever.
Oh my God.
That was like a thing. Like he couldn't sing his own songs. And then I don't know much about her, but Taylor Swift like re-recorded her stuff again so that she owned the rights to it then. Or
well, musicians have like the shit end of every stick. I'm trying to remember from school because it was been explained to me a lot. And I actually just had to re-explain to me because Bob Dylan just sold
for only $300 million. But then Bruce Springsteen got $500
million. And this is what the weird one is with it. There's like, I think there's three versions of rights for each song. There's like the lyric. There's the right for the lyrics, the right for the master. And then there's a third one that I can't remember. But Bob Dylan sold... The last one he sold, I think, was his catalog.
Mm.
It was like a music catalog. And I think he sold another one before that for like $200 million, if I'm remembering the number correctly. And that was either the master or that was the lyrics.
Mm.
Did
Bruce Springsteen just sell everything at once? Or
he might have sold everything at once. But that's like the thing with musicians is every bit of your work, it's split up into like multiple categories there. You have to own completely different pieces of like each thing. Most of the time it's the studio owning it, not you, which is how you wind up in situations like with Taylor Swift. Because the one I remember they always explained it was, I think it's why Prince changed his name.
Yeah.
Because he didn't own Warner Music. Yeah, they were the contract was all jacked up. Mm-hmm. So his genius plan to get around it was changing his name into a symbol, which I recommend it to everyone. If you if you ever want to get out of legal trouble, change your name.
You're scot-free after that. Yeah.
This is our legal podcast.
We're good. We're lawyers.
We're giving awful information to people to take to heart. Yeah.
Joe Rogan gives health advice. We give legal advice. You know, I'm an expert in bird law.
Oh, what a good reference. Always Sunny is always just the best show ever.
Yeah. Lived it for a few years now, too.
I don't want to ruin anything, but this is going to be a promotion now for the new season of Always Sunny. The first episode, they literally did an episode where it was like their version of Forrest Gump, where they were an integral part to every terrible thing that happened in 2020. So that's all. I won't spoil anything else, but they were at the forefront of every awful thing. I recommend it to everybody listening.
Sounds about
if
right.
If you don't want to watch my special or come to the comedy show, please just patronize the Always Sunny people. They're amazing.
They certainly are. Longest running TV show now, too, or something like that, right?
Yeah, they've been on forever. They're not going to stop.
No, I mean,
that's the dream, dude. That is like the absolute dream for creatives is just kind of be in business with your best friends for, 25 years.
Yeah, become an institution.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Simpsons still doing it, too. You know, and that's a little more corporate with Fox and everything, although I think Fox owns the Always Sunny platform too, but
it's FX.
I don't know how that works, but
it's FX. Yeah, it's like the same company. Disney owns everything.
Yeah,
they think whoever's at the top of the chain, they just have everything.
That's how it is. But it's good. We're still revolutionaries out here in the trenches, you know.
We're just trying to make cool stuff to sell to the people at the absolute top. That's all we're trying to do. We're like I'm not going to speak for you. I'll say I'm the opposite of a revolutionary. I'm like a shill.
Hey, it's just it's all pragmatic, you know. However,
that's actually going to be the name of my next special. It's not an SE, a huge fucking show.
Just sell it for a ton of money.
Sell out. Literally, we'll sell it for $10,000. That'll be
the sell out is the new revolutionary. Sure. So March 4th, Knox Building, third floor in the McKelvey Gallery, the premiere of Matt Onesti Uncomfortable.
Matt Onesti's Uncomfortable. We're finally doing it. I'll be headlining. It'll be pretty much my first time. Okay, I've done one show since then. I've done one show since the pandemic.
Which show was that?
When Jesse released his special, I did a show with him in Columbus. But that was the first show I did in like 3 years. So this will be my second show I've done in 2 years. So everybody will get to see a new post-COVID Matt. I don't know what that means. He wears a mask now. He coughs sometimes. Sneezes.
Get those tarps ready.
I'm like Gallagher. I'm never going to stop thinking about that now, honestly. I'm just going to think about spitting on the audience and having them pay for it. Like, I think that's the
people goal. Are into that stuff.
That's a whole different kind of show we could be selling.
Yeah, we'll work on it.
We're doing that in the basement of the Knox. So the feds, if you're listening, shut up. But to everyone else, not name the feds.
All right, so part one of the show, we talked about your special. Part two of the show now. This is the Mahoney Movement Show, so it relates around this whole project that we've talked about that hopefully once the weather gets warm, we'll actually do an interview on the trail and stuff. So the idea to give for our first-time listeners out there, to give you a rundown, there was the old Pennsylvania and Ohio Canal, 1840, 1877, and it went from Newcastle all the way to Akron, along the Mahoney River here, Youngstown, Warren, and all that. And I realized one day that the Stavage Trail, going from Newcastle to Struthers, and the Ravenna Trail that goes all the way to Akron, it's part of that old line. And we're the missing gap in that, to have a trail that goes all the way from Newcastle all the way to Akron, where you could then take the Ohio Erie Canal to Cleveland and whatnot. So we talked about, you're a strong advocate for universal accessibility and whatnot. Yes. You've been doing stuff with the county.
I actually, as of recently, I've been added onto the board of directors for Disability Rights Ohio, which is Ohio's main protection and advocacy group for all, like, there's like 3 million disabled people in Ohio. And that's, I mean, this is a fight because you and I have been talking about this even before that. I was doing, I was helping out with the Mahoning County Board of Development Disabilities. And one of my biggest things I would notice is like, accessibility is such a gray area, and it's defined by people who have never lived in these circumstances. Mm. And to them, they don't see every angle of accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was really interested in what you kind of came to me with, because it's something that I never even thought about. It's something that I never considered until you kind of like talked to me about it, and I realized like how much trouble I had here and how much trouble I had at Kent State with driving my chair on sidewalks and using trails, and like realizing, okay, this is literally as far as I can go before I have to turn around and you know, go home and rely on something else. But yeah, accessibility is, it's I don't know how, without repeating myself, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing.
Well, from a design perspective, for someone to be a good designer of public space or of anything, whether it's a can opener to a city street, having universal design mentality of not designing for specific variables, but for a universal, you know, like to be able to anticipate anybody's particular situation. And so to be able to design for everyone. And I think there's the Hine Memorial Fund in Youngstown has been really good about, I think they put money into a universal, universally accessible playground in Wick Park. So I think that's awesome. One of their missions to do stuff like that. So I'm hoping with this, you know, if we eventually get this missing section of the trail done, that we do it with that universal accessibility perspective. And I know the Stavage Trail is in decent shape. A few years ago, it was like, you know, in a wheelchair it would not be accessible because there was like,
yeah,
it was all broken up. But last time I was on the Stavage Trail last year, it had been repaved and it is rather accessible.
Well, and I think that was a point like I was struggling to find completely is a lot of times you'll have places that are supposedly, and for people who aren't like watching us a lot or like on video, in air quotations, they'll say it's accessible, but you know, in this situation, there could be like, it's like a dirt path, you know what I mean? So yeah, it might be flat, but it's dirt. So if it's like rainy, then it's muddy and then it's unusable.
Mm-hmm.
This is another example kind of like off topic of it. But I'll notice this in hotels where they'll say, okay, you have a handicap accessible hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll go in the bathroom and you'll have a toilet, and then you'll have like the grab bar so you don't fall all the way on the other side of the bathroom. Like it's not anywhere usable for you. They'll say, okay, it's an accessible shower, but it's a big ass bathtub that like no disabled person with like mobility issues would ever be able to step into. But since they have like the qualifications, the grab bar, the, you know, in this case, flat path, whatever it is,
they check them out boxes of what you need to have, even though it's not actually.
And that's, I think, one of the biggest issues with accessibility is we create a lot of loopholes that it just comes down to like, can we check off enough of the boxes that the state's not going to give a shit about it? And then that has a crazy, you know, awful impact on the rest of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Stops us from being able to do things that we want to do that everyone else would do.
Mm-hmm.
Such as something as simple as using hiking paths and walking paths. Like, it's ridiculous.
So the state law, does it just try to meet the bare minimum of the ADA from like the federal laws, or like some states better? Like, does Ohio like compare to, like, is California have better accessibility laws?
So the Americans with Disability Act is essentially broad strokes. That pretty much lays out this idea that there can't be discrimination based on public access. You know, stair, like you can't, you have to have like a ramp or you have to have elevators. Like, but it's not necessarily, there's not like explicit guidelines on the federal level, because we have this crazy fascination with federalism in our country, where we want and we like intermarrying federal law with state law, and we don't want to tell the states what to do. We want to give them freedom, but then the states can be assholes, and then they do everything in their power to like say, okay, well, this is the federal guideline, so we're going to do the absolute bare minimum to what they're telling us to do. And it's
this country has a special interesting history. Like, on some people use state rights to be traitors and terrorists, exactly, to our nation, and other ones use it to actually stand up for
and I'm bringing up in that capacity because it's not just an issue that's exclusive to the disabled community. It's an issue that, like you said, it's overarching. You have people who will go, well, it's the state's right to do these things. Well, what about when the state's being a total dick about it? Mm-hmm. What about when they're like trying to stop Black people from voting? What if they're trying to stop disabled people from having access to buildings because they're, you know, we have a ramp, but like the ramp is, you know, half a foot wide and no chair can get into it. You know, it's those kind of things. And that's where I think, you know, the Fed should have a lot more overreach, because, you know, then we might have actual, you know, guidelines. Like, we don't have back to like hotels and stuff, there's no like interstate guideline for handicap accessibility. It's like, it's up to each individual state. So,
which you think that there would be, I mean, it was interstate accommodations which allowed the federal government in the civil rights movement to make an impact. So why can't that happen in?
Well, it is and it isn't. It seems to be being done on the absolute bare minimum. The next fight I really want to bring up, especially within the disabled community, is like modernizing the Americans with Disability Act. Even though we are like the most modern piece of civil rights policy, because it was just the 90s, mm-hmm, when we were finally considered.
And how amazing is that? To think about, in the 90s, people were just still smoking cigarettes everywhere, and like, there were no ramps of stairs. You know, it's like
there was like some states were better. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. The history of disabled rights is one of my favorite things to talk about, because it's so recent. On the grand scheme of things, like we weren't even brought into consideration for anything until soldiers were coming home from the World Wars with their legs blown off with PTSD, with shell shock. And these people were finally realizing like, oh my God, these things that I had access to before, I don't have access to now. Mm. I have nowhere to go. I've not like, and so that's where the fight came from. Before that, we were seen as like the parents' problem. We were seen as the family responsibility. And most of the times we were just sent off to institutions, and those institutions were atrocious. Yeah. And they were atrocious until the 70s. Famously, Willowbrook Institution, hilariously enough,
that's where you gotta start.
This was, again, just like 1975, I think. So mid-70s, a little early 70s. They were running like these awful experiments on disabled, testing, it was like hepatitis. They were giving them like hepatitis to test out like medication on it. They weren't feeding them. There was abuse, there was neglect. And that's what actually led to the creation of protection and advocacy groups for all 50 states, which is what Disability Rights Ohio is.
Those institutions, especially Babbitt, but even still today, like what a broad word disability is.
Oh, and we cover everything. From like physical and mental disabilities to like mental health stuff. We're also I'm gonna mess up the acronym, but we're also a protection and advocacy agency that is there for like mental health protection, which then covers like all the other, like, so all of these things fall under the umbrella of disability, which makes it really hard to write rules that are super general, because there's so many different kinds of us.
Or just to tailor to people's requirements and needs. You know, if you're lumping such broad categories of, schizophrenia and ALS mixed together, like what they're not even on the same spectrum, you know,
completely different needs. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing too. Even in physical disability to physical disability, there's like crazy differences.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use myself and another big advocate around here, William Clark. Him and I have been best friends since middle school. I'm in a wheelchair. He has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. Both have physical disabilities, but like I need help opening doors and stuff and like bottles of water, but he's able to do those things. But there's certain stuff like him and I also can't like lift or go up, you know, stairs easily, like that kind of stuff. So even in those physical disabilities, you still have to be willing to like be specific. Mm. And that's something that a lot of people have a lot of problems with. Mm. And that even goes to like back to the wrapping us all the way back around to accessibility is we have these super general accessibility guidelines that are so freaking archaic.
Mm.
I want us to spend some time focusing on them and trying to change them.
Well, that's awesome. You're on that board now. So that's with Mahoning County.
So this, the board,
or are those the state, or those,
yeah, this is, we're the state, protection and advocacy group, which that's, I kind of brought up the history lesson because it's something a lot of people don't even like, they're not even aware of that each state has a protection and advocacy group that is, you're pretty much appointed, by the governor. We were designated by when Kasich was in to be that protection advocacy group. Each state has to do it because, you know, when the Willowbrook shit went down, the feds realized, wow, we can't trust the states to do the right thing.
Mm.
So we need to create an institution that's sole responsibility is for that protected class of citizens.
And what an interesting thing that you have, it's essentially a private organization, but the states rely upon it to, you think government should already be equipped to represent its people without having to have a third party group do it. You know, it's almost kind of, but hey, thank goodness there's people like you fighting there.
Yeah. And you would think that we wouldn't need it, but then it goes back to like Willowbrook was a state run institution. Willowbrook.
And in New York too,
like, and that's what in New York, in a decent state, even in the 70s, they were still fairly liberal, and you know,
and even Cuomo wasn't even the governor then. Cuomo, they still had problems.
Cuomo was even doing terrible things then. But like, even in those circumstances, they're so. And I don't want to believe it's ever malicious. I in the institution, it is in the to the people directly doing it, but I. There's a part of me that still doesn't want to believe that the people in charge of like, you know, the departments and, you know, running, you know, the Congress.
Well, the institution itself, like you ever hear the Stanford Prison Experiment too? I never thought about those kind of parallels before, but like the institutional, that show, and for those that haven't heard about it, in the 70s, it was just like white middle-class kids at Stanford, and they randomly assigned some of them to be prisoners and some of them to be guards. And within like a day, it was like Abu Ghraib there of like, you know, some like serious, like
there was
weird tortures.
Yeah. There were like all terrible things that they just took to us.
So you have good people. It's not so much like some bad apples in a barrel that ruin institutions, but there's institutional issues themselves. And like the discussion about police in America too, that's another thing. You know, you have good people, sure. But when you have institutional issues that perpetuate problems and like,
I wonder what, like, I guess maybe it's just a power thing. Maybe that's all it is like just an exercise of power. You give these people some sense of authority over individuals that they view as lesser, and then nature takes over.
That's why I'm an anarchist.
Yeah.
You know? Which we got to bring Joe Danny in for the anarchy libertarian segment that we do every week too, you know, like. Talking about, well, yeah, we, Joe and I have some like great discussions on that too about, you know, like the there he comes.
Yeah. Get him in here.
But it is an interesting discussion about like that it's not just the left-right paradigm, but you kind of have there's different perspectives. So like I agree with, you know, libertarians and anarchists both have a distrust of authority. You know, yeah. The difference, I think, mainly is where the free market comes in and like how you deal with that.
It seems to be easily corruptible. Like authority just on its own seems to have this like, seems to teeter, and it doesn't seem to take a lot to push it over the edge. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think, Joe?
Hey, just an observer.
Oh, yeah, just observing today. Well, how are we doing on time anyways? Before we really... We're still good? Huh? But yeah, I'm with you on that. That's, I mean, where you have institutions... I mean, to me, the only legitimate form of government is democracy because it needs to rest with people. Power needs to rest with people.
And it needs to be, like, spread out. Like, I'm a big, like... Democracy works, and then democracy has to only work with, like, a ton of checks and balances. Because as we're seeing now, even as a country, the United States seemingly had more checks and balances than any other democracy in existence. And somehow even ours got thrown out of line. Like our founding fathers were apparently super naive and thinking like, oh, yeah, no way. Like two of the three checks and balances, the executive and legislative. Honestly, I could even say the judicial to even some capacity has been like completely like rat fucked. I think we're not even thinking that, you know, morality would win out, that the decent people would step up and do the right thing. I think they thought like, oh yeah, we have way more than enough to counterbalance any sort of like autocrat or crazy person that comes in.
Well, how much did January 6th rest on Mike Pence doing the right thing? And you know what happens if, and that's scary when it comes to that, dude.
The craziest part is like, we just had the bare minimum to scave out alive. But since we're not doing anything now to shore up the system,
well, yeah,
who knows what's going to come of it? Like, if it's literally as easy as like, okay, I lose an election, I can go on TV, claim fraud with zero evidence, and then lead a like redneck beer hall push against the bastion of democracy, and nothing can happen afterwards, then like I'm gonna do that, then I'm just gonna start doing that from now on, like
I think one of the most interesting things about all that is how many lifelong Republicans in working for Board of Elections, whatnot, who probably even voted for Trump, but were simply there doing their job of making sure that the votes are counted, and how the Trump people all turned on them. And then they're lifelong Republicans, and now all of a sudden they're getting death threats.
Yeah. These are lifelong Republicans working in a bureaucratic form, working at Board of Elections, doing literal just fucking paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were parading guns around them, following them to their homes. Like, that's not healthy. We shouldn't be looking at that and being like, oh wow, everything's fine, we're gonna be okay at the end of this. We're not gonna be fine. We have to like, you have to call that shit out for what it is, and it's wrong and like autocratic bullshit.
Yeah, which, speaking of which, there was someone the other day talking about like the right wing and the Russia alliance now. And, you know, it's
confusing.
It's
the most confusing thing ever.
I mean, there were people at Trump rallies that had T-shirts on about like, I'd rather be a Russian than a Democrat or something. Like, what world of America do you have that the right wing is now pro-Russia?
One of my favorite videos I've seen this past year is right when the Ukraine stuff started to like kick off. And I can't remember what congressman was on Tucker Carlson's show, but like Tucker Carlson's like, Russia, we love you. And like this dude is like, we're supposed to be on the side of democracy. It's like, that's because, again, these are the same fucking people. This is the same party of like Joseph McCarthy and the Red Scare bullshit. Oh, let's decry communism, and we're never going to think about like anything else but democracy. Russia's the worst place ever. And now all of a sudden they're like, I love Putin. I love Putin. He's the best.
Well, to bring it full circle again, talking about the entertainment industry, you know, didn't Fox News have to actually claim to be an entertainment?
Yeah.
And they're in a court case, and they're not a legitimate news organization. They in a court case, had to declare themselves being an entertainment
destination. That. Alex Jones had to do that to, he was in a custody battle for his kids, and his wife's lawyer was like, he's batshit crazy. And then his lawyer was like, it's a character. And right. everyone was like, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, it's a character who's telling parents of Sandy Hook victims that it's a government hoax.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think we like entertainment a lot. We like dopamine rushes. We like our attention being held, and we don't care what holds it. And if it's somebody screaming at us about lizard vampires eating your children, or Vladimir Putin riding in on a horse to save the day, for some reason we're more drawn to that than like actual information, like reality, than philosophy.
Well, charisma wins in the end. You know, people, you put on a suit and you're charismatic and people follow you.
It's professional wrestling. We'll call it what it is. And one of my favorite arguments, or actually one of my favorite articles I read, which was right when Trump was getting elected in 2016. It was an opinion piece comparing everything to professional wrestling, of the whole environment, the way Trump carries himself, the way him and Stone Cold beat the shit out of Vince McMahon and Bobby Lashley. That was amazing. Led to Vince McMahon getting his head shaved. Everyone, you know.
Entertaining. Just tough when it's actually the basis for our government.
Yeah, the fucked up thing was that guy then wound up becoming president all these years later. And
I think that's what's interesting about the Bernie Sanders aspect. That Bernie Sanders is someone who I believe has been on the right side of the issues and for his whole life. And he has that certain kind of charisma that it.
Yeah.
So I wonder. At what point, you know, how do we get more of that? How do we?
What you use it for? And a guy like, it's way easier to turn on your charisma for, it's so much easier to turn on your charisma when you're like just cutting a promo or doing like a comedy roast, as opposed to trying to explain to people what systemic racism is and like this idea that, you know, you need to be paying more in taxes if you want society to function properly, if you want people with disabilities to be taken care of, if you want poor people to be taken care of, if you want to make sure people are fed, if you want to make sure your schools actually function properly, if you want to make sure that you have like everything that you rely on in your daily life, like.
And even if those people want to be selfish, it's in your still best interest to, always. If you want to live in your mansion while society just burns outside, that's one thing. But if you actually want to live in a functioning society where, things are decent, then you have to make it as an investment,
How good is your mansion and all of your money and all of this like obscene wealth when everything around you is like covered in gasoline and ready to explode? Like, I'm all for like make money and do what you want and like, but don't do it to the point of allowing others to get hurt. Like that's all it ever comes down to is like, just as long as you actually are following like whatever your moral code is, like, because there's a million different words for it, virtue, morality, decency, whatever flavor you subscribe to, as long as you're actually following it and not picking and choosing when you follow it. It's really all that matters.
Yeah. The end of the day. Yeah.
Just don't hurt people.
Yeah.
You don't need to like hoard wealth to a point to where like you're hurting the community around you. Like, and you also, can't be disingenuous and be like, oh, wow, we got to pay for, all these programs, socialists. But then turn around and be like, our military needs, a couple extra $1 billion. It's
for
like,
planes that don't ever actually work.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, if you're going to be if you're going to at least hold these views and be like, let's not put money in anything, it's a waste. Be that way for all of it. Just,
oh yeah. But then how much about, well, I think about this a lot with the transportation thing about it's the highway system is more subsidized than any of the previous transportation systems that we've had before. Doing research on the canal and stuff, that ended up being a private and state partnership to make that happen. Whereas you have the highway system where it loses a lot of money. Sure, you have a gasoline tax and stuff like that, but it still isn't enough to cover the highway infrastructure. So people will say, accessible active trails, that's a waste of money. We just can't afford it. But then when you look at how much money is spent on the roads, same thing with Amtrak. Yep. Something like Amtrak's budget for its entire history doesn't equal to 1 year of what the federal budget for is for roads, you know?
Yeah, all this stuff is getting money. And that's, I always forget about like Amtrak, just like the FAA and like airplanes and all that. Cause that was another fight that I tried to get into. It was one of my first advocacy fights, was like, sending a letter to Tim Ryan to send to the FAA about like, why the hell can't we drive airplane, or why can't we drive wheelchairs on airplanes? Like, why is that not allowed? Why don't they even consider it? That's a whole long explanation, but they just simply don't want to sink the time and money into it. Mm. They don't want to look into safety. They don't want to look. And this was like 2016, 2015 ish.
So has there been a change in policy since then? Really?
Left on red. I was essentially left on red by the FAA. Tim Ryan sent my letter to them. They sent it back and they were like, sorry, not sorry. It's too dangerous.
Are you talking about for like electric wheelchairs or just
electric,
like, because of the battery element or what? What do they use as an excuse?
They're literally worried that if the plane were to start crashing into the earth, that the chair would break free from its straps and then ping ball around the cabin, killing everyone as the plane's crashing from 30,000 feet. Which I'm like, what's the big fucking deal? Like, why do you want them to suffer? Just put them out of their misery. Like, what are we arguing?
Yeah. Whereas on a city bus, which does actually,
vans and buses have had this technology for like 30 years.
But the airline industry can't.
But the airline industry it's come down this fact they do not want to spend the time and money on it, and there is no one forcing them to.
That's clearly a federal thing where the FAA regulates that. How does that not qualify for the ADA?
It's because the ADA is yet to be modernized.
Wright brothers were already flying.
If I'm remembering correctly, I think airplanes were invented in 1993.
I think so.
Don't fact check me on that, okay? Because I could be wrong. But no, like, because here's the thing. The ADA was passed, and like a lot of policy gets passed, and a lot of shit's kept out of it for simplicity's sake to make it palatable to conservatives who don't want to change anything, who are like, let's just keep it the way it was. That's history. And we're like, you want to keep a history where there's no access for an entire community? And they're like, yeah, that's what we want. That's not what I'm just filling.
We want Confederate monuments with stairs all around them.
I don't know. Again, like I said earlier, I genuinely want to believe these people aren't as malicious as their actions say they are. I think it's a lot of ignorance and not considering those like basic things. Like, okay, what are we going to do with public transportation for disabled people? They're going to tell you, and like they told me when I brought the issue of the airplanes up, is, well, it's accessible. And this will bring this back around to what we're talking about with the trails. We'll say, oh yeah, it's accessible. Fuck, do you mean it's accessible? Well, you're allowed on the plane.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but to get on the plane, I have to have my dad lift me out of my wheelchair, put me onto an aisle chair, which is very tiny. I have no hips and a metal rod in my spine, so getting out of my chair sucks. So he has to put me on that aisle chair, then they have to take me to the aisle chair, to wherever the seat, transfer me again to another seat where I have to sit in a chair that's not my wheelchair and be like, literally just flop around for hours. And then while that's happening, my wheelchair is put into the cargo bin,
which is probably banging around. Yeah. And I brought bikes on planes before. I know how those end up. So I can imagine a $20,000 chair.
My pain tolerance is crazy. I am now officially a new recipient of an Ohio medical marijuana card. I finally made it. Thank you for the applause. I finally earned it after all these years of being disabled. I did my due. I paid my dues. Uh-huh. So I can.
Well, initially, when it first came out, it was very like you had to have like cancer.
So the funny thing is, I actually don't. My condition that I got my POC card for isn't even spinal muscular atrophy. It's just because I had surgery. So like my actual disability played nothing into it. because that's how shitty the law was written. Mm. That they were like, oh yeah, you can have a neurological disorder. And then they were like, but the only neurological disorder they spelled out was ALS. I don't have ALS. I have spinal muscular atrophy. It's a neurological disorder. But like, since you fucking idiots didn't put every neurological disorder or just say every single one of them, you know, but I digress again.
It shows you how out of touch, you know, legislators can be.
All these policies are written by people who just are not concerned enough to do like any more research than asked of them. But like with the, so I can deal with the pain of getting on a plane because I have a medical marijuana card. I can figure it out. The problem is every time that I've flown, my chair has almost been broken. And that's a shitty thing to do to somebody in a wheelchair. These are my legs. I've had my armrest destroyed. I've had wheels busted up. Mm. Like
those things are like $20,000, right?
These
like
are way more than that. Are like $60,000.
Jesus.
Thank God for insurance and Medicare. Mm. Like, That's a whole other conversation, but
well, we've talked about that too, about like what there's different like thresholds they try to regulate, like what your chair can do, even though the chair may have more capabilities, they put like throttles on you and stuff.
Yeah, so and I mean there's all other one. Like the insurance company will pay for, you know, like a base model chair, but then you have to get show proof that you need like the tilt and the recline function and the raise function that I show you to like raise, like you have I'd have to have like a physical therapist be like, he needs to lay down. Mm. Otherwise, like his spine's going to get destroyed. Mm. And then like, okay, I believe you. But like, here's another one. I have to send my insurance. I just got my chair fixed. I have to send the insurance company proof that I'm still disabled, even though I've had like an on the record disability since 1998.
But we see that you haven't seen Jerry Falwell, and he may very well be able to.
And they watch the special and they're like, you got faith healed in your special. We're a little suspect of what's going on here, buddy. I'm like, listen, guys, it's movie magic.
Yeah. Back to the entertainment industry.
Yeah, don't get fooled by a green screen. But no, like they're like, oh yeah, your doctor's notes from last year. It's not from this year. So they don't quite believe you yet. And it's like, what does that even mean? But that's the crux of this whole argument. They'll tell you things are accessible, but they're not. Mm. It's getting on a plane isn't accessible for me because I have to risk my chair breaking. That's not a good trade-off to make. So it's not accessible. But under the law, technically.
Mm.
Same thing that, which I do want to look, I'm going to look more for when we do the, your documentary. I'm going to dig into what like the accessibility rules are for that, because now I'm like super curious of how jacked up they are, because it seems to be one of the most consistent patterns. Mm-hmm. Is we'll call something accessible, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm. That's back to the philosophical aspect of it all. Like Simon thought about, you know, I believe that there should be human right to healthcare.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of playing with this idea of like, what does it mean if there is a human right to transportation? That as a human being, you have the right to be able to travel. And the government should not make, especially shouldn't make it prohibitive for you to be able to travel. And I think government policy has in many ways, if you look at how the freeways were built through cities, like it cut off entire neighborhoods from each other. So it's almost like because the United States has prioritized the automobile and freeway traffic to actually other forms of transportation, that you have one, that aspect of being prohibitive, obviously talking about physical variables, you know, that can be prohibitive with the way transportation is structured now. And then of course, economic barriers to being able to travel. Just thinking about like what that mean of like,
the right to transportation, the right to be able to freely move about, that is like a huge piece to what liberty means. Like this whole, I mean, we're a country that's completely founded in the French Enlightenment philosophy of life, liberty, and property. Mm-hmm. Which if you recognize that as life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, it's because old TJ stole it directly from John Locke, because you know, people have been stealing material since before Carlos Mencia. But no, like that falls under liberty big time, because it's stopping your, it's not allowing you to have the autonomy to live to like pursue a job, to pursue a career, to pursue, I mean, even just like leisure activities. Like to me, like the ability to do things for leisure is just as important as being able to do things, you know, out of need.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's being a human, you know, to be able to have access to that.
The Albert Camus called it the ephemeral beauties, those little things, the little intricacies and the little things that you see in your day-to-day life that aren't a necessity to day-to-day life, but they're beautiful. It could be anything from a beautiful sunset to an amazing conversation with a complete stranger. And not being able to travel around, to explore, to have easy access to roads and paths to get from one side of the town to the other, that limits your ability to experience life to every capacity.
And with this weather now too, like pedestrians are getting hit out there. Someone was killed on Midlothian. Because if you look at,
I literally just noticed that we're coming down Market. All of the sidewalks are completely covered in snow. I'm seeing there's people walking on the streets because they can't walk on the sidewalks. And like, it's dangerous for everybody.
Well, I vented a little bit on the internet the other day about, because I almost got hit on my bike again on Mahoney Avenue. Yeah. Like, I've been going up and down Mahoney Avenue my whole life on bicycle. And now that there's a bike path, it's more dangerous than ever. Because what they did is, now the bike path is just where all the snow goes. So it's a mountain larger than the rest of it. But also now Mahoney is one way, both ways. So coming down past the Mr. Peanut Bridge, there's a pedestrian walking that's walking on the street because the sidewalks are not accessible. And I'm trying to go around him on the bicycle while cars are just flying by on both directions. Yeah. So it's like, so once again, talking about universal design, but also there was like some meme before about design versus user experience. Yeah. And it was like, it's like a perfect, a brick walkway, but then everyone takes the shortcut through, you know what I mean? So it's like, thinking about what is the actual user. Sure, it looks good on a map that, you know, here's your bike lath and everyone's going to be safe there. Yeah. And then here's, you know, but no, and you actually look at what it means year round. And that's not the only design flaw, not just for the wintertime. The way they design that path is that it spits you out right at the in oncoming traffic where the Mr. Peanut Bridge is. Yeah. So it's just like things like that. And if they would actually like consult with people of all kinds of variables to how they experience it.
They just like consulted people, you know, and not just like one person, but like a group of people, different stakeholders. It would be, you know what I mean? Like,
I found with both the city and the university, they'll spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on outside consult group from St. Louis, wherever. Yeah. But then if a resident speak up, their voices aren't heard.
Because again, it goes back to the point that we were talking about earlier. They're a lot of the time, and it's not even just with like checking boxes to be in disability compliance. It's literally with everything, because there's a lot of compliance for a lot of different rules and policy. It's just people hiring these consultants so they can check off the right boxes for the cheapest amount possible and not have to worry about anything else. And that's like, that is such an overarching problem all across the board. It sucks.
Yeah. So how to have the revolution to get past the bureaucratic state and then the for-profit, you know, there's a lot that needs done. But we'll wrap it up.
There's so much that needs done. We're going to finish this conversation March the 4th.
Yeah, March 4th, the Knox Building above the Federal. Matt Onesti's Uncomfortable, the special. So are you going to be showing the special and doing a live set? Or are you mixing?
I'm going to be doing a live set. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing about half new material and a couple of the gems from the special. And then every ticket is going to come with a copy of the special. Since I'm going to be releasing it on my website, it's going to be a QR code or a link to a website, to my website with a password. And then all you have to do is download it and you could have it forever.
It comes included with your $15 ticket. You get a live show and you get the special too.
You get a special and you have it forever. You can watch it with your loved ones when you get home every Christmas. It could turn into a tradition.
Mm-hmm. And you won't need the tarp at home either.
Won't need the tarp.
Matt Onesti Super Soaker with the...
You can talk to me after the show and I, for a very low, low price, I will come to your house and soak the shit out of you. That is the grossest thing I've ever said into a microphone. And I think that is the best place for us to leave.
Yes. It's a family-friendly show here, you know? All right. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks to our audience for watching. We'll catch you next time. Thanks to Joe Danny with Youngstown Studio here in downtown Youngstown, Ohio.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and